JC2S, Part 1.
Number 14B.
Yes, so we go on now and see how we did concerning spirit to spirit. We see here that Mrs. Eddy presents now these miracles of Jesus, where it's the pure language of spirit that speaks through parables, miracles, and the final triumphant over death. So the pure language of spirit is now speaking through the miracles of Jesus, spirit to spirit, through the Jesus being the symbol then for the language of spirit. And she presents then this subject in its in a fourfold statement. Always when there's something we can see that needs to be brought out very definitely here, we see it now in its operative sense. Now we see and have written down then that ear hath not heard, nor hath lip spoken the pure language of spirit. Now we went on and said our master taught spiritually by similitudes and parables. And we could see this now is under the tone of the word. And we say to ourselves, why is this the word? How can we hear the tonality of spirit is spirit presented in the word, the statement then we would have here, of spirit to spirit is making its statement. Now remember that the tonality is that the language of spirit is speaking through similitudes and parables. So we get a statement of that fact here. Always the word is a statement, isn't it? So we just hear that it's stated that now our master taught spiritually by similitudes and parables, that Jesus' teaching was through through symbols. And what was he teaching? The language of spirit. Ear hath not heard, nor hath lip spoken the pure language of spirit. Well, then what is the statement that will tell us does hear and does speak the language of spirit? Well, that which does speak the language of spirit would be the similitudes and parables, would be the symbols. So here it is stated, what speaks the language of spirit? You see, that's the what, that's the word. And so here we see that Jesus teaches through symbols, through words. Now, the next point will bring out the Christ. Now that we see that it is stated that Jesus taught the language of spirit through similitudes and parables, through words, through symbols, because he's teaching. There's the words he taught. That's always at the point of the words. These symbols mean the words. He was a teacher. And then as the Christ, he becomes a student. Isn't that interesting? First he taught, he's a teacher. Then he's a student of the Christ. So with the word, you can hear a word accentuation. It's just tremendous how exact things are. As the word teaches, it makes a statement. But when you're a Christ, it's a student. Because the Christ happened to him. He was a divine student of the Christ. But he taught from the standpoint of the word. Spirit is spirit. So as a student, what was the accentuation? As a teacher, he taught through symbols, through words. But as a student, he unfolded God to man, illustrating and demonstrating life and truth in himself. So as a student, he let the Christ idea happen. That means he's not doing it. He's letting it happen. He was a divine student. He was letting that Christ translation and retranslation happen to him. So as a student of the Christ, he was letting the Christ unfold God to man in himself. So his life, his works, then become the ways of communicating. you see, illustrating and demonstrating life and truth in himself. And so you hear this switch from the word, the statement, teaching through symbols, through his life is now illustrating and demonstrating. That's the symbol. So you have two ways of teaching here, through words, through similitudes and parables, which we call symbols, or through signs, through his works, what he was. Then, you see, what's the outcome of teaching through symbols, through words, and then letting his life be an example through its works? Then you see the outcome is his power over the sick and the sinning. That's always Christianity, isn't it? Healing. So the outcome is then that heals. What heals? When his words are when his words and works are one, that heals. So it's showing that that the word in the Christ together heals. So when his words and works are one, that brings in healing. You see, so many times our works are not the same as our words. That means what we say is not what we do. And if what we say is not what we do, that doesn't bring healing. That it's only the outcome of the coincidence between what we say and what we do heals. Therefore, Jesus could say everything he wanted, and if he rushed off and did everything in the opposite, he wouldn't have much healing going on, would he? But because Jesus said and did the same thing, it shows here the outcome is the power over the sick and the sinning. And that's a big point of Christianity, especially today in theology. We notice quite blatantly in the world how words and works aren't quite going on in electronic media, is it? Not much healing going on when the words and works aren't quite the same. So this is pointing out it has to be so. And that's been a problem, we know, with theology over the years, how difficult it has been for the words and works to always stay the same. But we know that the words and works cannot stay the same on a moral effort. See, that's always the point. That's why theology falls down, because it's just what Paul said about old theology. That which I should do, I don't do at all, because it's on a moral effort and there's no way I can do it. But when did Paul? When was Saul able for the words and works to go together? Well, when he was on the road to Damascus, he met the Christ, didn't he? It was the Christ that made his words and works have its coincidence. See, the Christ is always bringing out the spiritual agreement between God and man. So without the Christ, there's no way the Word and Christianity can get together. The only way the Word, God, the statement, in Christianity, the outcome, the works get together is only through the Christ. So I know Max has brought that out a lot in our last summer schools, hasn't he, about how we can't jump from the Word to Christianity. We need the Christ. Well, that's just a law that is in being. That's that fourfold operation. This is why this is in the four, to bring home that we can't jump from the words into the healings. We've got to have that Christ, letting the Christ happen in our lives. If we let our Christ happen in our life, or we're a divine student of the Christ, then we see the coincidence occurring. The coincidence is always the Christ. Remember how in Christian Science you'd go into the practitioner's office and they would stand us in front of the mirror and always say, well, now God is in front of the mirror and man is the reflection in the mirror, and the Christ is the mirror, making the coincidence or agreement. Well, I always thought it was interesting but never understood it. You know, it was a cute example but didn't do much until we come into this subject where we really do see how the Christ does make the agreement between God and man through its translation and retranslation, through the law of Emmanuel, God coming to us specifically, and then overturning in us specifically everything that isn't like God, so the outcome is that we are like God. So this now is something that is important, and that's why you can see she's bringing it out in the fourfold operation, not to miss that the fact of how important it is to be the student of the Christ and let that happen in our life so that the word and Christianity become one, and that's healing. Again, as I mentioned before, remember that John Dorley has said that you could say, Jesus could have said, go to hell, and he still would have healed patients. That it wasn't what he said, but what he was that healed. And so it was the Christianity tone he was healing under, where the words and the works were one because of the Christ. Wonderful. So we saw that already, didn't we? There in the first translation, how we've seen now that it's only when we go out from the first translation, from that mind which is God, that mind which is revealing itself to us, that mind is Emmanuel with us. It's giving us the vision to go forward. It's only on the first translation can we go forward with the vision of mind, the intelligence of mind, based on that intelligence, which gives us the faculty of discernment at spirit and the spiritual understanding of soul, then to come out of the first degree of Egypt and to go through the wilderness into the promised land. We see if we went out from the second translation and tried to make it through a moral effort, we would never make it into the promised land, because the physical Cain always kills the moral. It always overpowers it. It's just the belief in that realm. Then, once we see then the outcome of the Christ is to bring together the Word and Christianity so they're one, which is healing, then we go on and see that human theories are inadequate to interpret the divine principle involved in the miracle and marvels wrought by Jesus, and especially in his mighty, crowning, unparalleled, and triumphant exit from the flesh. So here we now hear the science point, where it is then that this divine principle is the interpretation. That's science, isn't it? That divine principle is the interpretation now which comes to explain the words and works of Jesus. That only those words and works can be explained now on this divine principle of the Word Christ, Christianity, and science, bringing out the tone of the language of spirit being taught through the symbols and signs, the words and works, can only be interpreted on this divine principle here, showing itself as the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. All right, so that is something where you see needed to be in the fourfold operation to make that coincidence clear between the Word and Christianity there through the Christ. All right. Then we go on to spirit as soul. And we see here then that it says that the five physical senses are too opaque to transmit the language of spirit. So then we have to ask ourselves, if the five physical senses are too opaque to transmit the language of spirit, then what does transmit the language of spirit in a positive sense? So we'll look then and see if that's answered on 1:17:24. Oh, good, a little bit, huh? All right. Evidence drawn from the five physical senses relates solely to human reason. And because of opacity to true light, human reason dimly reflects and feebly transmits Jesus' works in words. Truth is a revelation. So we see now it says, we certainly hear the negative sense of being brought out. She makes that very clear there for what we see in this main tone as of spirit as soul. I think that's very clear that the five physical senses are too opaque to transmit the language of spirit. She just says that very clearly here. Now, what would then, we're going to have to rely on what channel then would be able to transmit the language of spirit, would we say? She says here, what is implied, and we can, that's part of text interpretation, what is implied, if it isn't transmitted through the five physical senses, then how could it be transmitted? All right, through soul sense. So one could say, in the same vein, then that as soul, that the language of spirit is transmitted only through soul sense, through spiritual sense. That's the channel through which to see and hear the language of spirit. And she says here that truth is a revelation. All right? So what we have under discussion now is the language of spirit. So therefore, that language of spirit, that truth is revealed, as we see. It is revealed, and it's revealed, as we've just said, only through soul sense, only through spiritual sense. And we could also say then that it's only soul sense or that spiritual sense which is receptive for the revelation of truth. For the revelation of truth, and therefore the revelation of the spiritual meaning of those spiritual ideas which the language of spirit speaks. So that wasn't so hard, was it? All right. Now we go on to the next point. Spirit is principle. So we see here now that that we have a bit of a change. We look at the diagram that we looked at yesterday briefly. And so I know that this is typed closely together, but we see now that we've come so far in seeing now that that mind science, from the standpoint of divine science, that mind science does what? That mind science is now speaking the language of spirit. Spirit always goes back to mind. So we say, okay, now what is speaking the language of spirit? Well, it's always that mind which is all-inclusive. Isn't that what we learned in the main tone of mind? That it's the all-mind, and that mind is all-inclusive. Now that mind speaks the language of spirit. See, that's always the origin. So spirit always goes back in our reasoning to mind, and we say, okay, now I'm going to carry along in my reasoning that main tone of mind. And say, all right, now it's that all mind, which I learned in the main tone of mind, is all-inclusive, the all-in-all. And that mind is speaking to me. And what it's speaking to me is the language of spirit. And therefore, as mind, it's speaking a language that has only a spiritual meaning, speaking only pure ideas. And it's speaking to me through spiritual symbols, words, and signs, works, which are one. And now as soul, we saw that that language of spirit can only be transmitted through soul sense, through a spiritual sense. Therefore, the only channel, that's a Christ, through which to see or hear the language of spirit is through soul sense. Now we see that that language of spirit at the point of principle now becomes the leaven of spirit. Why do you think that she brings the leaven of spirit in so predominantly here at this point of principle? Because principle always is what? Principle is the demonstrating power, the operative power, isn't it? Principle is always demonstrating itself. That's where we get the operation and demonstrating power is in principle. So here, spirit is principle, is operating or demonstrating itself as the leaven of spirit. So here we get that language of spirit is demonstrating itself at the point of principle, is operating as what? As the leaven of spirit. So in our epitomes, we began to underline the leaven of spirit as the language of spirit. So now the language of spirit begins to operate as the leaven of spirit. And in the epitome, we see then that leaven of a spirit is the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation. It now becomes the leaven of spirit. All right, we can just... I wanted you to see that how the language of spirit now becomes the leaven of spirit. And I'll come back to that. The language of spirit is a leaven of spirit, and the leaven of spirit now is the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretations. So we'll just go back to the epitomes, and I'll come back to this. But I just want to go back to the epitomes so to show why here that why the leaven of spirit comes in. It switches now from the language of spirit into the leaven of spirit that we've underlined. Because that language is operating as principle, at the point of principle as a leaven, leavening the whole lump. And that is the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation becomes the leaven. And we've already discussed this, haven't we, when we went through those early introductory points, how the leaven is always... that which is changing, isn't it? It takes a substance and it changes that substance from one form to another, but it still remains that substance. So we see then that the epitome reads that the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation is the leaven of spirit. That leavens what? All human doctrines. So let's hear if we can hear that on page 117.29 to 118.5. Jesus bade his disciples beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees, which he defined as human doctrines. His parable of the leaven which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal till the whole was leavened impels the inference that the spiritual leaven signifies the science of Christ in its spiritual interpretation, an inference far above the merely ecclesiastical and formal application of the illustration. All right, so we go back, and now with that tonality of the capitalized terms, we go into the text. And so it says here, Jesus bade his disciples beware of the leaven, that we could underline in red, the leaven of spirit, orange, that's the leaven of spirit. Now it's of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, which he defined as human doctrines, so therefore, what would that be, why is that in here? All right, it's the opposite of principle, and principle here stands in its tonality four. That's true. What is the true leaven? Would that be the false leaven? Yeah, see, he's saying beware of this false leaven. So that's the opposite of the leaven of spirit, which would be the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So you could underline that in purple in a broken line if you like, showing it's the opposite of principle, as you say, which he defined as human doctrines, is also the opposite of principle, isn't it? So that could be done. So we have now the opposite of the leaven of spirit, which it says in the epitome is the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation. Here we get the false leaven, which Jesus beware, and he says that false leaven is the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, false human doctrines. So you have the opposite of the leaven of spirit at the point of principle there. His parable of the leaven which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal till the whole was leaven impels the inference that the spiritual leaven, there we can underline that now, that's that the spiritual leaven, the language of spirit, appearing as the spiritual leaven, signifies the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation. So there is spirit as principle. That the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation is now, from now on, going to be the leaven at work. An inference far above the mere ecclesiastical and formal applications of the illustration. So in this subtone, we have presented now what the leaven of spirit is. Mm-hmm. And we see that, well, we'll just go on to the next tone and then we'll come back. All right, then the next point is spirit is life. The epitome reads, the spiritual leaven of spirit, though hidden in sacred secrecy, is ever at work to destroy the entire mass of error. Now, let's read then from page, on page 118, 6 to 12. Did not this parable point a moral with a prophecy foretelling the second appearing in the flesh of the Christ truth, hidden in sacred secrecy from the visible world? Ages pass, but this leaven of truth is ever at work. It must destroy the entire mass of error and so be eternally glorified in man's spiritual freedom. So now we have quite a bit going on here. So first of all, we keep remembering now we're going out point one from the capitalized terms in the epitome, and that was that we have the spiritual leaven of spirit is ever at work life. So somehow we hear here that the spiritual leaven is ever at work. But what is it as work at? What is it at work as? The leaven of truth. Quite interesting. So you get two leavens here. One, the leaven of spirit is ever at work as the leaven of truth.